Welcome to the Tactical Security Podcast.
Welcome to Tactical Security, where we argue security practices from a technical and a managerial standpoint. Here's what you need to know about today's security tactics.
This is episode 8. During this episode, we will be discussing security frameworks and do we really need them? And is this just another tool for consulting companies to use frameworks as a way to keep their revenue growing? And are these genuine standards that guide the industry? Are the few frameworks in use the real stopgap to having fragmented and unvetted consulting frameworks? That's what we'll talk about today.
And the answer are yes, yes, no, no, yes, no, and maybe. I am Wolf, and I am an advisory CISO.
And I'm going to argue those points. I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know my work with Hack for Kids.
So Dave, this is a really good topic for me. You know, I've been on the financial services side where we had to maintain a number of frameworks. One of my early security successes was actually bringing together a GRC platform to provide one set so we didn't have to be audited against a dozen things. And I've also been on the consulting side and have developed and contributed to a couple standards. So I'm looking forward to this conversation because there certainly are some strengths and weaknesses to talk about.
And in some ways, I see you being more qualified for the half of the conversation because my professional role has been primarily looking at a framework and mapping products to it as a solution to help solve people like yourselves, whether consultants or people that are actually trying to adopt a framework to, you know, how do you get there? And it's always been one of those things where I feel bad that, well, yeah, we could help you with this one, and that technique, but you're kind of on your own with those other 25.
Now, do you want to start with some of like the control perspective? Because there really has been a division in this, right? There's the, let's call them very high level, very aspirational, you know, the big frameworks you build on that are usually compliance driven.
Right.
And then there's a lot of different industry frameworks. And then there's also, you mentioned tactics. So when you did that, my mind went to the emerging frameworks that align with what the adversaries do, be it PTES, which is the penetration standard, be it ATTACK, which is adversarial tactics, techniques, and common knowledge framework. Where do you want to begin?
I think maybe for some people listening, just maybe like I think you're doing a great job of letting them know which frameworks exist from a cybersecurity standpoint. You know, there's also CIS and there's some NIST frameworks out there, but I think if we go through all of them, it's just too daunting and no one's going to listen to the end of the podcast. They'll never make it to the end. So it's true. So you feel, I mean, I think maybe a little free flow from yourself would be cool, but I'm really more prepared to maybe focus only on the MITRE ATT&CK framework because it just seems to be one that a lot of people tend to gravitate to.
Yeah. And I think I'm all about talking about that framework. I do like that framework. I've used that in threat modeling and in security exercises. So the ATT&CK framework is, the idea is, can we codify at some level the steps an adversary will take and behind it layer in these defensive responses, the countermeasures that that someone should follow? And in a way, I think it's like forms or katas, right? If you're doing martial arts, there's a form that exists that you can practice, you can run through that helps you build your muscle memory. It's very repetitive. You don't actually use a form to fight, but you use a form to build up those core skills so that when you are in a sparring match, you know what to do. So in my way, my very simple way of thinking of the ATT&CK framework, it's like a series of katas that an organization can perform to build up key strengths before the adversaries come in.
I really like that metaphor. It creates a great visual. And I think for most people, it should be easy enough for them to relate to. And we can work off of that and build that even further during this podcast. But I think one thing also, when you kind of look at like the MITRE ATT&CK specifically, right, there's a framework and a matrix, right? And then there's also other matrices for things like cloud or cyber kill chain, but we're not going to get into all those. We're just going to kind of look at the primary matrix, right? And to kind of talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind, I'll just keep going in that direction, is, you know, there are tactics, right? So, you know, tactical security. So we're going to talk about some tactics, and those tactics could be something like reconnaissance and resource development. Again, these are specific to MITRE ATT&CK, all the way through to things like exfiltration and impact, right? And there's 14 of these different tactics, but each tactic is supported by some number of techniques. And the accounting side of me had to go and figure out, like, or not figure out, but do the math. Well, how many of techniques are there? And it added up to 205.
Behind that 205, there's probably, you know, a dozen different ways to defend against each one of those or to execute on each one of those. So it gets complicated very quickly. And to your point earlier about, you know, the way vendors use these, it always made me wince, because I would have someone, usually a you know, fresh-eyed, flat-bellied, hungry sales guy who's probably, you know, all full of hopes and dreams, who's sitting down with me for the first time and already counting the money he's going to make off of the sale. And he opens up his PowerPoint, he puts out on a slide and goes, here's what you're worried about. Here's what's keeping you up at night. And for one thing, security has never kept me up at night. But for another,
good for you.
And then the next slide goes, here's all the tactics, and we cover 38% of them. And, you know, if you don't do this, companies are getting breached to the tune of billions of dollars annually.
Fear.
And I'm looking at that going, okay, so in theory, you could say that your WYSIWYG gadget covers credential access, which is one of the hot level attack frameworks. But to say it covers, it doesn't necessarily mean it covers everything, right? Because under there's things like brute force and, you know, force credentials or session stealing. There's so many different permutations. It always drove me nuts when a vendor came out with their big green circle and the framework that says, we've got you covered.
Well, and there was you reminded me of one company that does a lot of advertising in airports, and it would be like, email security solved. And it's like the one product, I'm like, no, one product is not solved. Data storage and recovery and data deduplication solved. No, it doesn't. No, there's more than that. And that's kind of one of my arguments for frameworks, is somebody might go in and say, well, you know what, we want to do a better job of security. And the one thing that I do like specifically about what frameworks, they answer a question is like, how well is an organization, or how well, you know, if it's you and I adopting a framework, how well are we doing at detecting and documenting any kind of adversarial behavior in our environment? And to me, I think that's really tantamount to things like having that visibility gives you the ability to make intelligent decisions based on that the data, and then what compensating controls do you need, or what protections do we need, and what is that going to cost, right? What's the business value? So I I think it's important that there's the difference between the green circle and we got this, and, you know, you just have to do this or buy that and you're good, versus, well, what is the real value for our business? What, you know, why are we doing this? And answering that question I stated earlier.
Well, and I think it goes even one level deeper. Security is fundamentally a human problem, as I say so often, with a technology component. So it's great that you have solved email security by your great appliance. Is that installed? Is it working? Is anyone monitoring it? Does it cover all the use cases? What is the process behind it? And I may have shared this already in previous podcasts, but I've got plenty of examples where my team, I used to do consulting, as you know, we would use a framework, absolutely. We'd use that to drive the conversation, great. We would ask them, hey, do you have this thing? They would say, yes. We'd go, awesome. I'm so glad you have the thing. And then I would send in my red team to go, hey, test this. Do they really have the thing? And I've got story after story of, they had the thing, but it was unplugged. They had the thing, but they forgot to license it. They had the thing, but it was no longer connected to the span port, so it wasn't monitoring. you know, just because you've invested in a tool does not mean you've created technology. Just because you've got a pretty picture of what that kata looks like, right? Here's what a strike looks like. I printed it out. I've done it once. Does not mean you can consistently do it again and again and again when you're on the mat.
You kind of reminded me, and we don't need to get into the whole story, but you reminded me of the story where you said you had the thing and it was a firewall and that, yeah, everything is segmented. And I think it was like something with PCI and where the payment, the card data was. And I think the firewall was still like, just allow any, nobody apply policies. Reminded me. That was a good start.
Yes.
But kind of going on off of what you just previously said, there's two things I want to touch on. One is figuring out the time factor when it comes to implementing the thing, right? And when you want to go implement it, you know, you could spend a lot of time doing the project plan, or you could just say, well, we bought it and we're going to implement it, or somewhere in the middle. But there are some issues where certain organizations of equal size and equal risk may take more or less time to achieve some kind of positive impact from the framework. And by itself, the framework is valueless, right? This is going to be, I guess, more of a philosophical argument, but it's valueless, and you've got to figure out, like, what parts of this framework are we going to implement? Which tactics, which techniques, and how is that going to drive value for the overall business and InfoSec? Now, I kind of said that a little bit before, but let me think of some examples, right? I think a great example was something somebody wrote in some article or something some time ago, comparing like IT or InfoSec or technology to things like pets and cattle, right? I'm sure you've heard that one before, right?
Yes, I made a face just earlier today when that was mentioned, and Wendy Nather leads our team, and she immediately called me on Slack. She goes, "I see you." So go ahead, talk about
pets and cattle. Well, okay. Pets, what are they? You know, they need a lot of care and feeding every day. They need a little attention, right? You got to actually give them food, take them out for a walk maybe, or make sure their bowl is clean, and or if it's like, you know, a fish, you know, change their water, like all that stuff, make sure there's not too much ammonia, a lot of attention. And you can compare that to certain techniques within a framework, like active scanning, for example, right? Actually, maybe let me give the cattle example first. Cattle, you essentially just say this is cow one, cow two, cow three, just like your web servers. And if they're all basically pretty autonomous, they just do their thing. You've got, you know, a combination of Kubernetes and Docker working hard for you, or Ansible. And you know, if you need a new web server, one appears. If one has a problem, you get rid of it. You know, it's just cows. They just get the job done. And when you start to look at things like active scanning, well, the scan is scheduled. It should just happen. It is cattle. Do not even think about it until it doesn't happen, but it should just always happen. But then that report that's generated, that's more like your pet, right? That thing is going to need more care and feeding, but only really reporting on exceptions. So if there's an ACL that's supposed to be in place, and it's not, or your firewall shouldn't allow certain traffic, but it is, then yeah, obviously you need to respond to that. There's a little care and feeding. And I think that's kind of at least one thing, like at least for me, or my advice to anyone listening, is that should be their approach. Like, they need to really define which parts of the framework and the techniques they're using are cattle and treat them as such, and which parts are pets, rather than just treating it, all of it, like cattle and all of it like pets.
So putting aside my dislike for the pets versus cattle analogy, which, you know, shout out to Bill Baker, who's the one who originally came up with that. And I get the idea. I don't like it as a gentleman who grew up in a rural setting. I'm like, we didn't treat our cattle like that. But I think the point is well stated, that there are certain controls which do need a lot of care, feeding, attention, personalization, customization. And there are certain controls that should be commodified, that should be just standard, should be done over and over again. You know, I've said for a long time that frameworks fade, but security is eternal. And the reason for that is the basic motions of security, the fundamentals, are what matters. What frameworks are is an abstraction to say, here's some checklist that we should do to make sure that you are doing the right motions. You know, frameworks fade, security is eternal. And if you link that to pets and cattle, what that means is, you know, anything that is defined as cattle as commodity, you know, needs to be done consistently, very straightforward, done at a consistent level, done with style, and done in a way that doesn't take too much of your time, so that the pet side, the emerging controls, you can spend more time on.
But how do you that a little bit? Well, and that kind of actually leads into my next argument, is the finish line just keeps extending. There is no finish line. And, you know, you might be able to have short-term goals or finish lines, but for the entire framework to be done, by the time you say this is what success looks like, it's already obsolete. And you know, you imagine, like, you know, running that race and you're winning, and every time you get really close to that line, they add another 100 yards. And that's really what I think you're saying, is security is eternal.
It really is. I'll give you my current favorite pet control story, Dave. And you may have noticed this. So there was a while where new domains were where your risk was, right? You know, Amazon has had their domain forever. Google has had their domain forever. You know, J.W. Gorelick has been a website for, you know, 10, 15 years now. Probably longer than that, actually, now I'm thinking about it. But what do criminals do? They register a domain name for a phishing attack or for a command and control, and then they use it. So there was a control that was very effective from, say, 2016 to 2020, which said if your domain had not been seen on the network, had not been registered recently, I'm sorry, had not been registered a while ago, if it was a new domain, an emerging domain, it was ranked as high risk. And there are many organizations that would just drop that traffic altogether. Great control. Worked well until the adoption rate reached around 20%. When it was just one or two people doing it, worked awesome. When around one in five organizations were doing that, the criminals caught onto it. And if you look at a recent breach, the analysis of like what happened with SolarWinds, what did they do? They attacked from old domains. They had domains they had registered and sat on for a year. They compromised other domains that no one was using, and they used these old domains as a way of navigating and getting into the environment, thereby completely circumventing the control. And as a matter of fact, now that has been seen and the pattern is known, more and more attacks are coming from older domains, existing domains. So you're right. The finish line just moved there, right? It was a defined TTP, new domains, load your CNC, go. And therefore, it was a defined way that defenders could stop you, look for new domains, block them. And then the minute enough people did that, the criminals changed.
So you're agreeing with me?
I am, in fact, agreeing with you.
All right. So I got one point. All right. Let's see if you can win a point.
But I'll let me change the rules though for just a minute. Are you familiar with Zeno's paradox?
No, I thought you were gonna actually say, am I familiar with the Kobayashi Maru?
Ah, yes. Remind me, not part of this podcast, to tell you about the time I won the Kobayashi Maru.
I will.
So it's a great story. So Zeno's paradox is a mathematical paradox. It says if I'm going from point A to point B, and I go halfway there, I've now got halfway to travel. Okay, that makes sense. A couple more steps. I go halfway there, but I now have half more way to travel. As a matter of fact, if you think about it mathematically, you never actually reach the end, right? No matter how many times you go just halfway there, you have a sliver of space remaining. So you can never actually reach the end of things. And Zeno compared it to an arrow. If you fire an arrow at a target, every point in time, it's not actually hitting that target. It would never hit the target mathematically.
Right.
And in a very real way, that's what security can be stated as. We never get to the end. And if you got a good auditor Every time that they say, yeah, that's pretty good, do this one thing. The next time they're coming back, 6 months or a year, they're going to assess you harder. Why? Because you've gotten better. I think that's your argument about we never reach the end of a framework, right?
Well, it's that, but the attacks change, the platforms change. Like, I don't know, 20 years ago, nobody really cared too much about the cloud. And that became a place to go to now. And they're decommissioning data centers because everything was protect the data center. Well, if your data center is now in somebody else's data center, that's really not much of a concern for you. You need to now protect access to your applications or your platform if you're using, you know, platform-based services.
Absolutely. But if I think about frameworks, they're also changing. And if I think about it back to that kata metaphor, right? Ideally, you've got a series of forms that you're trying to master. Those series of forms have been divided up among a series of belts, right? Everyone knows the black belt. Yep. That's where everyone wants to be. so there is a progression. There's a maturity. And each motion builds on a motion that came before, ideally. Now, taking that back to security, I don't think it is a arrow to the knee of a framework to say that every time we assess you, we're going to assess you at a harder level because you've already passed that earlier level. I don't think it's a need to a framework to say, hey, this framework exists, but we've now added this new rule to PCI DSS to have better TLS encryption because of an emerging threat. This framework exists, but now we've added, you know, new things to the CIS critical security controls because we've noticed that people are working around things. Back to Attack MITRE, you know, those framework is also being rapidly expanded as new threats emerge. I don't think that is a fault of frameworks. I think that's a strength of frameworks. Every time we assess, we want to do a little bit better. Every time that the criminals get a little bit better, we want the framework to get a little bit more specific. There's always going to be lots of coloring around the edges, but at least it gives us a path for our arrows.
You know, I love the arrow example. I'm an archer, and there's this thing called the archer's paradox, something for people to go Google, and how does the arrow hit the bullseye, but when it actually is recorded and viewed in slow motion, it's actually wibbly wobbly looking, and depending upon your bow, it may actually be pointing at the target, but it the way the string pushes the bow, it kind of sends it in a different path. And I don't want to get into all that because, you know, it's a whole hour long conversation, but I recommend looking at it. But I love that you brought that up. But I'm going to circle back to something I said in the opening of this podcast in relation to that finish line continuing to extend. And we had this conversation while preparing for this, is like the frameworks, right? So it's good to have these independent third-party bodies developing and creating these frameworks for people to use, because there's kind of really, it's very transparent. They're just trying to say, hey, we're just trying to help you, versus a consulting firm or a consulting framework where, and I know you have experience as a consultant, so you could really provide some feedback here, is the consulting frameworks are really kind of unvetted. And because they're unvetted, they're all very, very similar, but yet very, very different. And, you know, to do one thing like applying firewall policies, so they're not all any, one consulting firm says, yeah, we just could do that in 2 hours. And another say, well, we need 10 hours because there's all this planning involved. Oh, however they want to work it. But I'd like to hear from you on your thoughts about how consulting frameworks are also extending the finish line.
Part of the problem is the framework a standard framework, or is the framework something that the organization, the consulting organization, developed? There are some times where it makes a lot of sense to have a custom framework. So I developed at one point in time a data protection framework because I didn't see anything in the market that really talked to data protection, data encryption analysis, those sort of things. So I developed this. Great. It was a useful tool for me to use to benchmark other organizations. Great. I had a series of checklists and tests and, you know, analysis that could be run. Great. That allowed us to very consistently provide insight and value to our customers. Awesome. The problem is, and I recognizing this, I had built this in the framework, but the problem is oftentimes these frameworks are then put up in a way that is not transferable or translatable into other frameworks. So what does that mean? I, as an organization, bring in a consulting firm. They say, yes, you are a level 8 Oompa Loompa on our awesome Charlie Chocolate Factory framework. And I go, yes, I'm a level 8. And they go, yeah, but bad news, there's actually 100 levels. And you know your gaps. And so I go, oh, okay, I'm going to have to get more Oompa Loompas. And so then this framework gets passed down and passed down to the technology guy or to the auditor, internal auditor or whoever, who's like, how do I translate Oompa Loompas into configuration changes on my firewall, into my risk-based authentication multi-factor, into my NIST and HIPAA policy, into, I remember I said in the beginning, one of the first things that I did as a security officer was create a unified policy framework, because way too often these tools are used as differentiators. Okay. Maybe that's all right. If your primary business is a consulting business, you're trying to differentiate, or ways to lock someone in so that they're only using your framework and they're only looking at the world through Oompa Loompas. The reality is there's a series of policy, procedure, and technical changes that need to be executed. And those changes need to be done consistently over a number of different frameworks. So I do get very frustrated at the one-off custom framework, custom analysis tools that don't really provide much more insight into what needs to be done, other than to say, you're not good enough. And we all know that our programs are not good enough. You don't need to pay a consulting firm to know that.
So no, and that's great. I exactly what I was looking for, because when you're developing your own framework, so to speak, or adopting a version of another framework to be your own, you tend to become evangelical, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Which kind of implies religion. And where I'm going with that is, people tend to look at a framework as, you know, this is our new Bible. This is what we're going to do, or this is what we're going to recommend. And now they hold it so near and dear to them that it becomes so religious that they're going to lose track of the business value. Again, what was mentioned earlier in the podcast, and they tend to focus on results and audits. You could say, well, yeah, that definitely maps the business value, or does it? And then what they really need to do is take a step back. Think about the matrix, different tactics and the techniques, and what will those tactics and techniques do to benefit their organization, and then act. So it kind of comes back to, you know, what is a measure twice, cut once, right? A little bit more planning and more acting on that planning versus just going ahead and kind of jumping in.
Well, yes. And don't confuse your watermelon for your universe.
I never heard that one.
I don't know if this is just a Midwestern phrase or just a weird phrase that my family has, but I always like this idea. The model or the analogy is one thing, but it is not the thing itself. And if you tell a kid, hey, your stars in the sky are like seeds in a watermelon, the kid will go, oh, great. Now I understand they're like distributed and there's actually things up there and some are near and some are far. And that gets you so far. But if you try to fly a spaceship based on thinking that your universe is a watermelon, you're not going to get very far. So what's really important with security is that we don't lose sight of the fact that the framework is only there to give us a rough idea of what is actually happening and what needs to happen. It's only there to give us a checklist, but it is never a replacement, no matter how well it's measured or implemented. It's never a replacement for security itself.
I think that's a really good stopping point, kind of ending it on watermelons, spaceships, and universes. What do you think? So, hey, folks, so you could kind of see my point of view with frameworks. I am not completely adverse to frameworks. I do see they have their place in InfoSec, but that should not be the only place. I know there's other ones that are out there, like CMMC is more of a certification that's emerging now, but you're kind of going through the same steps. And that one's got a ton and ton of different things that you need to verify. We never mentioned PCI DSS for anybody out there in you know, credit card processing. And, you know, there's certain reasons for that. We wanted to keep it pretty succinct and tight. But, there's a lot of that translates across all of them. You know, this is definitely one of those podcasts where we could talk about these things, but it's really up to you to choose your own adventure. You need to figure out if that watermelon is your universe or not. You need to, you know, practice your forms and develop your katas and continue to build upon your techniques. So this way, when you do have to go into battle, you're prepared and you're well-polished. A lot of metaphors there, but on that note, folks, unless Wolfgang, you have some closing comments, I'll wrap it up.
No, I'm going to go read about the arrow paradox now, so I'm good.
Oh, this is a great video. This guy literally shot an aspirin from a couple feet away with an arrow. Hit it.
Wow.
It was really amazing. But all right, folks. Well, this has been Tactical Security with Wolf and Dave. Please join us for future episodes where we will dig into tactical tools and practices. Please let your friends know and to listen to our podcast. And always stay healthy, folks. Question truth and be better.